Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I am Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, it's the 21st of October as the month runs out. And, of course, the action in the stock market is pretty hot and heavy, so it'll be for a very interesting show.
Yeah, no, very interesting. There's a lot of things going on, and we've seen yet another V in the market. This one was probably the deepest one I've seen in a while. We saw that at the low, and that day last week, we saw the Dow Jones plunge 460 points and only to actually recover by the end of the day. It was pretty interesting to see that. And then the next day, we saw a similar action, but less range, and then it recovered, and all of a sudden, we're off to the races, because, do you know why?
Because people are crazy, and the government's manipulating the market?
Yes, that's all. Moving along. One of the big reasons is that there was a lot of Fed speakers that came out to defend things and to prop up the market, put a hand under it, talk about maybe having another round of quantitative easing, or at least continuation of it, and maybe not increasing rates, and the dollar was too high, and a whole laundry list of things that went on over the weekends, last 2 weekends, that seemingly helped things out. Now, one of the things that's interesting was that today was the biggest move on the S&P and the NASDAQ this year so far. Now, it's being said that, well, Apple's earnings were really good, and that's the reason why, but let me tell you what happened. So overnight last night, the futures were dropping. They were coming in pretty good, down about 10 or 11 points on the S&P. And lo and behold, at about 4 a.m., they started to move up. And they reversed all of that losses and started to climb. Now, one of the things that happened was that Europe has been having a lot of trouble. And the question about whether or not their central bank would be doing anything with buying bonds and asset-backed securities have been propping up. And all of a sudden, the conversation got much louder, and even before the open today, with poor earnings from several key components of the Dow, the futures were just rising and rising. And even yesterday, with IBM, which we'll talk about in a second, a putrid report from IBM, the Dow was up. And this is all on the idea that, wow, Europe is now the next one to start stimulus, and the markets loved it. And then it just kept on going all day. Apple was only up about 2.5% today on these blowout numbers. Did you check out these numbers?
No, why don't you go over them?
So Apple, their earnings on a revenue basis and their earnings on a earnings per share basis was absolutely stellar. You know, a lot of times Apple sandbags, but this time actually they guided a bit higher. And everything across the board on Apple looked good. There was a few components that didn't look so good, but they sold just a buttload of iPhones, which we knew was the case. And actually, even their MacBooks were selling. Now, one of the problems was that their tablets, the iPads, were sliding. They saw about a 7% reduction in total sales from the previous quarter to about 12.5 million units. And were down about 13% from a year ago. Margins are coming in a bit as well,
right?
But, you know, overall it looked good, but it wasn't, I don't think it wasn't anything to, you know, as market showed you, it wasn't anything to, you know, get absolutely giddy over, but it was very good.
Yeah, and the tablet thing I think is a probably peaked.
Yeah, no, clearly. I mean, I have a year-by-year measure of each of the units that are sold, and if we look back in 2012, quarter three of 2012, there was 26 million iPhones sold in that quarter. This quarter, 39 million. 39 million. 39 million widgets is a lot of anything, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
iPads, 17 million back in 2012, 630. And they're stuck at 12 million. They ramped it as high as about 22 million. In the first quarter 2013, and it's been slowly dropping ever since. Macintosh, they sold, this is all their various computers, they sold a total, it was back 4 million Macs back in 2012, in that quarter, 5.5 million. And the one thing that's definitely sliding, and I think everybody expects this because it just makes sense, is the iPod. Like, what does anybody need?
I thought they discontinued it.
Well, there you go. They sold 6.7 million iPods in quarter three 2012. The high was 12.5 million. In quarter one of 2013, they only sold 2.6 million because what's the point?
Yeah, you've got a phone.
Yeah, you got a phone. You got an iPod built in. So I don't know who the people that are buying the iPods. Maybe kids? Maybe?
I don't know. I have no idea.
But there's still a lot of things you could do with that. If you're in Wi-Fi, you could do messaging. You could do, I guess.
Yeah,
you know,
the new ones. Yeah, the newest ones are pretty powerful.
So overall, Apple looked really good. But I don't think that was really the catalyst. But it was somewhat partially. Because yesterday we saw IBM. Did you look at any of that news that came out there?
Yes, not good.
No, not good is an understatement. So the company missed on all metrics. They really missed on earnings per share very dramatically. And I thought there was something, a few things that were really interesting here. First of all, the day before, they announced that they're selling their chip business to a company called GlobalFoundries. But the interesting thing about this, did you follow any of this?
A little bit. This is the beginning of the end for IBM, by the way.
I need to restate this because you have to listen to this. IBM sold their chip business off to GlobalFoundries. IBM paid GlobalFoundries $1.3 billion to take it off their hands.
Yeah.
Now, this was the day before. You knew there has to be something going on there, okay?
Well, there's something weird. I mean, there's probably a reason, I'm guessing, that they did this deal the way they did. I don't know if there was any holdback or if they still have a piece of the action or if they're... It's got something to do with the patent portfolio. I have no idea. This whole thing is very strange.
Well, anyway, you look at it. Anyway,
IBMers that could explain it to me.
Yeah. Anyway, you look at it. They paid to get rid of this. Now they're going to be using GlobalFoundries for exclusive use of the 22 nanometers, 14, and 10 nanometer semiconductors over the next 10 years. So they even had to get an agreement to guarantee that they would use the various semiconductors from GlobalFoundries. On top of the fact that they paid them.
Right.
Now, the stock is down to about...
I wouldn't call that great negotiating, by the way.
Something was bleeding pretty hard, and they needed to stop it. And you know what? Maybe they're going to take... This is IBM. You know, this is what they've been doing. A lot of financial engineering. So maybe they're going to take this as some kind of a loss and offset something somewhere, and that will pop up their EPS in the future. I don't know.
Well, you've always had this thesis that IBM has been manipulating the stock for the last 5 years.
Yeah, no question about that. And you can see here, without a significant amount of revenue to cover up and the fact that they pretty much blew it out with all of their share buybacks, IBM is just, I don't even know what they are anymore. So the stock is down at 162. It was 195 back in September. Now, I have a friend, a trader, who now expects the imminent firing of Ginni Rometty.
Okay.
So I said, well, who would replace her? And I came up with some crazy ideas. Maybe this has all been planned and Larry Ellison is making a switch. How crazy would that be?
It's pretty crazy since Ellison is pretty old.
Yeah, well, I think the galactic irony would be if Bill Gates took over.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen either.
Yeah, but that would be pretty cool. Who else is possibly in line?
Carl Icahn.
Ah, that's possible. Or even Buffett.
Ballmer.
That could be. I don't know. I mean, I don't know who would want to take the helm here. I mean, she really, whether she screwed things up, whether she took the helm when things were just really falling apart, nobody else wanted, who knows?
Yeah, I think she took the helm when things were falling apart and didn't have the skill set to change anything.
Yeah, they're really too slow.
It's kind of like when Carly Fiorina took over HP. She didn't do anything.
Maybe she could be up. Isn't she? She's no longer in politics, is she?
Not that I know of. She's not likable. She shouldn't be in politics.
Well, the interesting thing here is that unless something changes dramatically, I don't see how IBM is going to provide any kind of reassurance to investors unless they maybe go out and buy another company, or I'm not even sure what it is these days they have to do. So big problems for IBM.
There's nothing they can do.
Yep. Now, we had a lot.
They went all in. It was Lou Gerstner that they blamed for this.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. He's the one who went all in with services.
Yeah, that was. Yeah,
when services were a good idea when IBM had the chops to do services.
Yeah, but services is still a big part of their overall income. I mean, they really got hatcheted on the fact that, they sold off their PC business. They have the server business. The whole thing's a mess. I mean, listen, HP's no different.
HP is no different.
It's almost identical. They kind of followed the tracks of IBM.
Right. Right off the cliff.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there's a lot of other casualties today.
I think Dell's also kind of making these kinds of errors, although they're buying companies and doing some other stuff, and you can't tell what they're really up to because they're private now.
And you know what? Give it a little more time with these share buybacks. IBM could go private as well.
Maybe they should.
Yeah. And they come back out, a new and changed company, and you don't have no idea really what they did behind the scenes.
Right. Well, except cook the books.
Yeah. Now, the dollar's been rising pretty dramatically over the last several months, and there's a lot of problems. 20.
We're looking at $1.27.
Yep. And the yen also has been falling. The euro's been falling. But
108.
That creates a tremendous amount of headwinds for multinationals. And we talked about this. Now, one of the big casualties of this so far, today, Coca-Cola. Stock was crushed. They missed all metrics across the board.
Because of the international? Because of the money?
They're blaming currency as a major part of the recent, as also they're also saying that...
Can't blame the weather.
Yeah, well, right, exactly. But they said that, sales were down across the board in every region, and earnings missed by a pretty good margin. And they guided lower, and they said that the currency situation, because I guess of improper hedging or whatever happened there, is going to take down their overall profits by about 7 points.
Huh. That's a lot.
And it's a lot that Coke was down 6.5% today. That's a big move for Coke. So here's an idea. Coke needs growth. This is not a new story, by the way. Coke has been slowing, or at least their growth has not been moving ahead. Yeah, it's like 2-3%.
They're saturated. The market's saturated with Coke.
So the question is, how are they going to get some kind of growth? Now, what happens in big pharma is they buy the little guys. They buy the companies that have maybe some, biotech companies that have drugs maybe in the pipeline or maybe some ideas, and hopefully they get a blockbuster out of it, right?
Right.
So one of the things that I've been looking at for a long time, and actually some of it came to be recently, was why not buy Monster? Because you can do a pretty accretive transaction here because you have the distribution.
Didn't somebody already buy Monster?
Well, Coca-Cola put a ginormous amount of money into Monster for a 13 or 15% stake. So maybe it's time that they pony up a little bit more money here and buy the rest of the company.
Well, they might as well buy, they should buy Rockstar. They should buy all those energy drink companies.
Yeah. Red Bull,
that's privately the pharmaceutical companies do exactly what you said.
Right. Now, some of them are private. Not all of them are publicly traded. That's okay. They can go buy private ones, too. Red Bull is private, one of the most profitable of all of them. Yeah, actually, they were the first.
Right. They're the ones who triggered the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I was in a Winn-Dixie today, and there was it was in the soda aisle, and there was a section called New Age Drinks. And it was all these...
Oh, like Sobe.
Yeah, all these kind of energy drinks and crazy drinks in there.
Yeah, Sobe and all that that horrible mold that people drink.
Mold?
Kombucha.
Oh.
Do not drink that, please. Do yourself a favor.
So we have IBM yesterday. Again, really didn't shake the markets. Coca-Cola today. We also saw that another earnings out today was Chipotle. Had a pretty good report.
It went down.
Yep. Because their guidance was for same-store sales in the single digits moving forward, which is not normal for Chipotle. Again, getting saturated to a point, possibly.
That's also the, yeah.
No, you don't like them, I know.
The cost of materials, I think there's a lot of problems.
Well, I mean, some of that's come down a bit.
And by the way.
Yes.
That El Pollo Loco, whatever it is, what was that
thing? El Pollo Loco, yeah.
Yeah, Pollo Loco.
Yeah.
I didn't, I saw one because I was in Los Angeles, and there's a bunch of them down there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a Taco Bell.
Right.
got nothing on Chipotle.
I looked at the menu. I was not impressed.
Well, I don't see how people are making a comparison with a Pollo Loco and Chipotle when they're not even in the same central market. I would compare them to Jack in the Box before I'd compare them to Chipotle.
Right. And people love Jack in the Box, even though it's an oily mess, all their stuff. You know, I mean, Jack in the Box tacos, the only time you eat them is very late night. Very late night. So, yeah, that's interesting. So I was thinking about that today. I said, okay, well, Chipotle says that their store sales are going to be slowing down. Now, I was wondering, is that good or bad for Pollo Loco? Is it good because, oh, well, they're stealing market share? Or is it bad because there's a reality check here that these fast food, Mexican and other style of restaurants are going to be slowing? So also McDonald's out today missed and had some warnings as well. So it's a big question of whether or not this Pollo Loco, which we are still short on the stock picks, whether or not that's going to, you know, play out. We saw some other news on Cree, and I should have done something with this because we've talked about this. So we had the whole light bulb discussion.
Oh, yeah.
Did I tell you that another light bulb went out? So I had one. I have one, two, three, four, five Cree LED light bulbs in my outside lights in the front of the house.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And three of them went out?
Two of them went out. One went out. I went back to the store, and I'm like, okay, hey, what's the story? Oh, no problem. We'll exchange it at Home Depot. Okay. They just gave me another one. They kind of like just gave me a pack, and I walked out the door. Nothing. They didn't check anything. Okay. And I thought to myself at the time, boy, that was too easy. You know, I know that they have this guarantee, but it seems like it's nothing. It was like it was nothing new to them that people were returning these. Okay. So, honestly, about 2 weeks later, another bulb blew out in a different light. Same bulb, 60 watt or whatever the equivalent is. And I went back to Home Depot and did the same thing. And I started thinking about that. Boy, that's kind of weird. These things are blowing out. Now, just, I think it was yesterday or today, one of these days, recently, I was at Home Depot and I saw that these light bulbs are now $9 when they were like $18 a piece not too long ago.
Right. They've come down.
And I'm like, 50% off.
They'll still come down.
Yeah. So Cree came out with earnings and it was nasty. They also guided lower once already before the earnings came out. But the stock came out with the earnings. I think the shares are down about 10% after hours. And by the way, speaking about warnings, IBM's numbers were so poor that you have to think they knew about that, that things were not shaping up. It didn't just, you know, last few weeks, things just didn't go right. And why did they not warn?
You tell me. That's the reason you want to fire Romanetti or whatever her name is.
Romanetti. Yep. Exactly. I mean, I think that it's pretty. It tells a lot about the company in terms of their, you know, relative desire to please shareholders in terms of, or more so, hiding things from shareholders, which goes right back to the whole idea of the share repurchases and the financial engineering that goes on there. We did see some good news out of Yahoo after the bell. They beat earnings by about, I think it was 19 cents, and they did issue guidance in line. So stock initially jumped only 3%. I thought that was pretty light compared to what you would have expected. Stock was up about 2% in the regular market hours, leading up until the earnings. But it still seems there's a little bit of hesitancy on that. And the question, I guess, is also, how much of the earnings are related to the Alibaba stake? You know, how much do they shove in there from that sale?
Well, they probably shoved it in as much as they could do legally.
Yep. Yep, that's correct.
I'm concerned about these Cree bulbs. I had a, and that stock, because I've always thought it was a good idea, that stock, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
We caught it on an upside last year. I've been buying a lot of sample LED bulbs from here and there using Amazon. And a lot of these come directly from China, and many of them are crap.
Right.
And they come all, they don't even try to make a good bulb, it seems. Mm-hmm. Just a bunch of little cheap LEDs all over the thing. There's also IKEA now has a few bulbs, including one very attractive packaging that looks pretty good. And I've been running them as much as I can around the house, replacing especially those crappy fluorescent bulbs, those little ones. Which
the curlicues?
The compact, whatever they are. Yeah. They are, that was the biggest scam they've ever put against the American public.
Yeah, I agree.
They don't work. I mean, they light, and then they start to dim.
And you can't dim them, really. You put them on a dimmer because they're fluorescent.
No, but there's actually some supposed that work with a dimmer. But besides the point, I'm saying they just lose. They're bright for about a month. And then they lose, and they lose, and they lose. And then they also get to the point where you have to turn them on, and you have to let them heat up, a lot of them.
Well, who needs that?
It's a bad technology. I don't like them. And nope.
You think they're leaking? I mean, think that the fluorescent vapors are leaking?
I have no idea why they're doing this, why they're losing their oomph. And after about, and some of them do go out, but the LEDs are supposed to pick up the slack and eventually take over and replace the big fluorescent bulbs, like the big long ones, the 48-inchers that you put in the kitchen or wherever, which still are the most cost-effective form of lighting. I think the LEDs are cheaper per watt for your energy bill, but because of the cost of the bulb, it takes too long to pay out.
Yeah, yeah. And they're probably just charging a lot more because it is this, they're good for 30 years kind of thing.
Well, I do have one that I've had for almost a decade.
Really?
An LED? When they first came out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, when they first came out, they had them at Fry's. And I bought a yellow bug bulb that was an LED bulb. It was, I think it's equivalent to about 50 watts.
Hmm.
And I put it in because the bulb, these bulbs that are the bug bulb that you have on your porch,
mm-hmm.
yellow,
yeah,
they blow up left and right. And all the ones that were being sold were cheap from China. They last about 2 months. And so I bought one of these early on. I think I paid $30 for it. And wow. It has been a truck. It just runs like a champ.
Yeah, and you can't get that stuff anymore.
And it's on 24/7.
Right. Can't get that stuff anymore. You know what? You just can't get any of the good materials. The old days, like you get the old wall board, what was on walls and ceilings, this really thick, plastery kind of stuff. Now you get this flimsy old,
Yeah, stuff from China.
Yep, exactly. So let's talk about some of the technicals that are going on. So right now, the S&P 500, it retook its 200-day moving average, and the 50-day moving average is a bit higher, but it's kind of in this no-man's land area. Current price is about 2 to 3% trading area. You can see clearly downside, about 1.5 to 2% back down to about the 200-day moving average, and upside of about 1.5%, and there's some resistance there. But in between there, because we dropped so hard recently on the downstroke, and one of the reasons we dropped was because if you look back on a chart to the left, there's just no action back there. There's just it moves so quickly up once to the level and then drop down, and when that happens, it leaves a void in the chart, a gap, if you will, not necessarily a gap like it just gapped lower, but no participation. And usually, when you want to see a good support level or resistance, you want to see that there's volume participation, and you're not seeing that here. So what happens right now where we are at this point, why we moved so quickly up today, was there was just no resistance. Nobody was looking at those levels as something they were going to sell into, or so the buying just moved things up. Now, where you have a range of about 1900 on the low to about 1950 in between there.
Yeah.
And we'll have to see. There's been some big moves off the lows over the past week because of Fed. And the other thing that's interesting to note is that as of this moment, the 10% correction that was being called on and looked like it was going to get there didn't happen. We only got about, maybe 8% on a closing basis. Maybe it was 8.75 or so, or maybe close to 9, maybe from absolute top to absolute intraday bottom, but mm-hmm. or the low. But we didn't get that 10% quote-unquote correction that everybody's been yearning for, it seems. Don't forget, when everybody gets a correction of 8 or 9%, the world is ending.
Yes.
What's going on? It's funny, we can have a market like we saw today up 2%. And you don't, I've said this 100 times, but you don't see a Fed official going, just to let you know, we're really maybe not going to be as aggressive as you think we are. Maybe you should chill out on the buying.
I've seen that.
Nope.
It's funny.
Funny. So the VIX went up as high as 30 last week.
Yeah, that's nice.
Now let's see where it closed today. Today is at 1608, down 50% in a matter of 4 days. It's like you know, hey, nothing ever happened.
Now, what kind of a trade could you make using that?
Well, what you could do, you could use options. You could use VIX options, and you could have either sold the calls or you could have bought a put on the downstroke or vice versa, depending on which way you think the VIX is going. And that kind of move, that 100% move, if you bought the options, especially if there was no warning, you know, before the market started really moving lower, you're probably priced at nothing. You buy them a couple months out, and then all of a sudden they just boom, and they're worth all sorts of money. I mean, you could have bought probably something for a buck, and you could have sold it for 15.
15 to 1?
Yep.
Why didn't we do that?
Yeah, well, we don't really buy options. But you could have bought some of the other vehicles that aren't as good, although they are, depending on the timing of them, there's the VXX, which is an ETF that is long the VIX. There's SVXY, SVXY, which is short the VIX. They don't work exactly 1-to-1 or even 2-to-1 like they're supposed to, but they have somewhat of a resemblance to the VIX, and they do actually, you know, have that same capacity, but not as good. So anyway, a couple other things here. China's GDP, assuming we can believe their reports.
Which we can't,
but they slowed to 7.3%, which was miraculously just above expectations like they usually do. I put together a little chart there to show you the historic GDP for China.
Okay.
Now, back in 2007, it was a whopping 14%. Remember, China was like the engine of growth. Dropped down to 9.6% in 2008. And with some of the stimulus and all the things that went on, it moved back up to about 10. Pretty good year-over-year GDP. I mean, we're talking about here, we're going to be seeing maybe about 3, and we're going to be all excited about 3. And now we're at a low since 2007 of about 7.3. And there was big concern when we saw that it was going to get lower than 7.5. Now everybody's kind of saying, oh, well, maybe it's really 7 we should be concerned about. So this did drop down pretty significantly. And it's showing that, obviously, the higher the currency situation where they really drove it higher over the years and the fact that it's a maturing population is having some trouble. Now, at the same time, again, back to currencies, because a lot of this deals with currencies, is that we saw that Japan had just stellar exports this evening.
It's about time.
Yeah. And one of the reasons
look at the ratio of their money. I mean, that should have taken hold eventually.
Exactly. So the exports were really good. I mean, again, you could buy something that is similar to another product that's 7% or 8% cheaper because of the currency transaction. It makes a lot of sense to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on there. And their market was up 4%. What day is today? So it's Tuesday. 4% overnight on Sunday, down 2% the next day. And right now it was up about 1.5% in early trading in Japan. Very volatile right there. A lot of talk from the central bankers and prime minister and all that. I mean, these guys just don't, you think our guys talk a lot. Between Europe and between Japan, that just not, it's almost like the central bank radio show.
Huh.
They just don't shut up. Talk. You know, all night, every night, you see news from one of these guys or both of them or however many that's talking. So, and the other thing that really kind of helped markets a little bit, we haven't seen any news about anything new on the Ebola front. Kind of interesting how it flared up and then just, that's it.
Yeah.
It's over.
Whatever they needed it for, it did its job, and now nobody cares.
Nobody cares. You know, we had a boat that was anchored or was stuck because somebody flew the Ebola cruise. And now it doesn't seem like people are too concerned, although there is still a lot of quarantine going on. There's 5 different airports that are targeted as those airports that will take passengers that flow through from some of the highly at-risk countries. And there's a lot more, supposedly, now the CDC said, oh, you know what, we made a mistake. We should really be doing this in our protocols. Well, everybody's kind of happy. It's kind of funny because they screwed up once. What makes us think that they're going to get it right this time?
I think we're living in a dream world if we think they're going to get it right.
Yeah. So I, and there's a lot of talk. There was a couple of drugs, and one in particular, ZMAP.
Yeah, the government that grows on a tobacco plant.
Yep, they're going to try to do some kind of. So there we go. We're going to use tobacco for another reason. No smoking, but using. I wonder,
an investment opportunity there.
Yeah, there's a company called iBio, I-B-I-O.
I-B-I-O?
Yeah, small cap that is working with the company that makes ZMAP. It was kind of got crushed. It went up really big, and then it got crushed. Let's see here. Here we go. So iBio was, it's a small company. It was down 20% today. It was as high as, maybe, I don't know, $2.50 or $3 maybe. Maybe $2.50.
Like it's $2.12, $2.17, $2.20. Let me go back for the whole max on this thing. What does this look like? Oh, at one point it was a year, that was in 2011. It was $5.50.
And then it came down. And
down, it kept down. Then it pumped up again. And the recent, it hit $3.21.
And then it just dropped. And the reason is the headline, because Ebola under control.
Yeah. So this thing hit 321, which have been, you wouldn't be able to get out of it.
No.
You'd be stuck because it's like, you know, it's Ebola, because it dropped like a rock.
Yep.
Now it's dropping like it's plummeting. It's $1.74.
Is right after the U.S. confirmed that they were working and putting in orders to figure out how to produce ZMAP. And again, iBio is not the company that makes ZMAP, but they're a company that works with the company to do whatever they do. They're involved with it. So that was good for them. But long story short, again, you know, we'll see this. All of the Ebola stocks got hit after Friday, when everything is better, I guess. Now, with all these stocks that we talked about, the ones like IBM, Coca-Cola, you know, there was one particular guy who took a beating on these the last 4 days or so.
Carl Icahn.
Nope. Warren Buffett. You don't hear this that often. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. What happened?
On these four holdings since the companies put out their earnings results, Wells Fargo, Coca-Cola, Amex, and IBM, big holdings for Warren Buffett, he lost $1.7 billion.
Yeah. Chump change.
Yeah. $1.7 billion. And other CEOs, what did you think of Microsoft's Nadella, who has been, you know, they've been swarming him with this whole comments that he made about
woman thing. Yes, yeah. He's an Indian.
Oh. But this guy, do you know how much he made his salary last year?
$85 million.
$85 million, first year on the job. And one of the things that he did to...
Seems a little excessively high.
Well, but a lot of that probably that was not a problem is because, you know, they fired 18,000 workers.
Yeah, I guess he took a piece of every one of their piece of the salaries.
$85 million.
Yeah, can make $85 million, but they have to fire people left and right. That makes nothing but sense to me.
Can he
cut back a little bit? Does he need that kind of money? Well, actually, the way he's going, he probably does.
Yeah, some of it was obviously in options and various deferred comp and all that. But still, some significant amount of money there. And, you know, he did, in fact, bring the stock up. And there's a lot more buzz around it and all that. But still seems excessive. Very excessive.
Yeah.
So, and then we have Salesforce. Salesforce is a company that is obviously a cloud-based CRM. And a client relationship manager. Good company. A lot of, they sell the software by the seat. So therefore, the more employees that are out there, the more potential revenue they have. And all that's good. But what's interesting is that their planned sales that were being sold by insiders is now approaching about $19 million. Not sure if it means anything, because sales sometimes are done for all sorts of reasons. But I thought it was kind of interesting that it's kind of getting a pretty significant number here. I don't know when the earnings are coming out. When did they come out already? Let's see if I have Salesforce. I got a list of, there's a lot of companies coming out in the next couple of days.
Salesforce is doing these big events in San Francisco that are outspending Oracle.
Really? Yeah, they had the Dreamforce that they call it.
Yeah, it's just a blowout event.
Hmm. I don't see them on my list here. But there's a lot of names. Lots of names. Next couple of days are pretty big. This week, about 25% of the S&P is reporting earnings. Yeah, I don't see it here. Hmm. Okay. Now, you know this whole fiasco with PIMCO and Bill Gross? You know, Bill Gross left in some kind of a...
Right, played that a little bit.
Right, and he moved over to Janus, and now the headlines are like, you know, Janus is Gross. You know, that's the big headlines these days. But a lot of municipalities and a lot of pension funds are dropping PIMCO. We saw several of them. Fort Lauderdale dropped them. The most recent is Ford dropped PIMCO. And what's interesting about this is, what I find interesting is, you know, PIMCO is not just one fund. The head of the bond desk or the bond trading was Bill Gross. He ran the Total Return Fund, the world's largest bond fund, and several other funds as well. But they have a lot of other funds. They have commodity funds, they have stock funds and all that. And I find it interesting that these municipalities and pensions are dropping PIMCO in total versus just not using their bond components.
What do you think that is?
I don't know. I guess there's a thought that...
Is maybe the guy stealing customers? Is that possible?
I don't think so. It doesn't seem... it's possible. I mean, he was running, I think he started with like a $13 million bond fund. Ridiculously small for him. I mean, stupid. It's like a major money manager, you know, handling one stock and 10 shares. You know, I mean, it was like nothing.
Yeah,
and I don't know exactly what the reason is that they're dropping it, but it would seem to me that it's because the view is that PIMCO was, you know, he started, of course, and even though he was really known for the bonds, but he was still very involved with the other aspects of it, and the thought that the company didn't have a handle on things and management is in a bit of a disarray because of all the stuff that went on. But again, you would think that if Bill Gross was a part of the problem and he left, that should be good. I don't know. It's a very confusing situation. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Well, it'll shake out eventually. We'll figure it out.
Eventually we will, unless they hide it like they always do.
Well, there'll be that, but still at some point you can figure it out.
Yeah. Now, Tesla is in the news. It seems that, and you would think that this state would be the one that would do this. Michigan is... I guess put some kind of a ban on sales of Tesla, saying it was illegal the way they were doing it. You know, because they're big on, of course.
Well, this is not the first state to do that. I mean, I think Texas, you couldn't sell them. I think they sued them, and they got. I think there's a couple of southern states. It has to do with the dealership model they use, which is no dealers.
Right.
You buy the car over the internet.
So Michigan, it seemed to ban them, and then we saw the news that Daimler, which had a pretty good stake in Tesla, sold their entire stake.
Now, I find that to be very strange.
Well, it could be because they're coming out with their own car and they don't want to have, you know, why would they want to have a stake in Tesla if they think their car is better?
Yeah.
Or maybe at least the perception that they're doing so. Or maybe they were trying to do a deal with Tesla for batteries or something like that and it didn't go through, so they got pissed off, or who knows. They probably made some good money on the deal, though. I mean,
yeah.
Who else is coming out? Harley Davidson is coming out with, or they have prototypes for electric motorcycles.
Yeah, I don't know what maniac would want one. I mean, the whole point of a Harley Davidson motorcycle is to make a lot of noise and shake a lot.
Yeah. Maybe they have little speakers on there.
You know, there was Harman International actually developed a bunch of very high-powered speakers for mufflers. So you could, these have never got released, but you could, you know, through noise cancellation, you can make any engine just dead silent. Or you can make any engine sound like a Ferrari V12.
Wow.
Just by flicking a switch.
And nobody wanted it.
I think they were too expensive and not really viable.
Right. You got to be kind of, you know, you got a little... a Volkswagen and also the Ferrari sounds comes out of it. Doesn't,
yeah.
Something wrong with that. You know, everybody's looking around. Where's that? Where is the Ferrari?
The Ferrari is Beetle.
Now, you know, oil prices have been dropping, and they finally started to stabilize about the $80 range and moved up a little bit, actually, towards about, about 83. And now, all of a sudden, there's a lot of investors that are starting to think, hey, you know what? This is overdone. And that's an interesting question of why has oil been dropping? You know, could it be all the infighting that went on with OPEC and that they finally said, you know, Saudi Arabia said, hey, you know what? We're not going to be the schmuck out here that is the only one that's curtailing production when nobody else does it. And, you know, we're going to get slammed with this. So, you know what? We're just going to let production go. We'll see what happens with oil prices. Whether it's the shale boom in the United States, that all this oil is being added to the supply chain, or whether it's demand, you know, all the things that are going wrong with economies around the world. So all these things came in, not to mention the one other point, which is the dollar rising and oil's price in dollars. So what happens as the dollar rises, oil comes down. So you have all these things, almost a perfect storm for oil. Now, all of a sudden, this big drop is 20% drop. By the way, I saw a couple of days ago, I was driving and I went up to Orlando and I saw gas at $2.99.
Yeah, didn't you tell me this last show?
Nope.
Oh. Somebody was bragging about the under $3 gas.
Yeah.
It's still about $3.50 here.
Yeah, I only saw that once. I didn't see anything less than that. I did see a broken sign that it's a $2.17. I was tempted to pull in saying, hey, your sign says $2.17.
There's an abandoned gas station around Menlo Park that has $1.29 on it.
Just to piss everybody off. Remember those days? So now, and by the way, who came up with the idea of $1.29 and 0.9%? It's always that 0.9, right?
Yeah, so yeah, good point.
What is that
about?
I
never thought about it, but it is. Maybe it was just a marketing thing like $9.99 instead of $10.
Right, because whatever price you're paying, you're really paying a penny more.
Yeah.
That's annoying. Anyway, so now what's happening is with the oil, investors are now putting money into oil tracking ETFs and funds at the fastest pace they have in years, thinking that, hey, you know what? This price has been overdone and oil prices are coming back.
Or people are think that's going to go up.
Yeah.
That's a bet I would not make.
Yeah. I mean, there is some support down the 75 range or so, 76, but it is interesting that if the dollar does continue to rise, if demand does slow, we just saw China's numbers came out, but of course they were better than expected, but they were slower. We see that that the fact is that as the dollar comes up and oil comes down, even so, the other currencies are going down so fast that it makes oil more expensive for them. And we know that Europe is just, essentially their economy is falling off a cliff. So the question is, where is this demand going to come from? And if we continue to develop and explore and then, you know, pump oil from the various places throughout the United States in such a way, it is hard-pressed to find when we're going to see a significant rise. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that with all the turmoil that we saw in the Middle East and everything that went on, oil didn't budge. Remember that? Like, why isn't oil going up here?
Yep.
Now, meanwhile, the oil stocks, oil service stocks, anything related to oil took a beating much worse than oil did, because obviously as prices come down, it's much harder for them to make money, depending on the company. Halliburton, which is a service, and Schlumberger, both came out with earnings in the last couple of days. Both beat nicely, and both were up beautifully. And we're seeing that some of these oil companies are turning around. Some of the smaller plays, there's a couple of smaller plays out there that are adjunct to fracking. For example, Carbo Ceramics. Mm-hmm. They make the shafts, and there's a company called U.S. Silica and a few others. You know, those companies really got beaten up pretty badly, and they kind of came up for a couple of days and then just stabilized and didn't, you know, kind of came back down a bit. And some of the real small oil plays really are still having a bit of a hard time, even though the market did pick up very nicely over the last several days. So they're really choking on the low prices of oil. Now, if oil does come back, and let's just say it gets to 90, well, these companies can really see a pretty big rebound, and we've been watching for that over the last couple of weeks. But I think there's still some opportunity in some of these oil plays because, I mean, they've really been just beaten down pretty hard. Look at the chart on Carbo Ceramics. I think it was a...
What's this? What's the symbol?
CRR. I think at its high, it was close to or at 150-ish. Now it was down to 50.
$53.80.
Mm-hmm. It was high as, what, 150 last year, right?
I'm looking. They've changed the Yahoo Finance has changed their one of their systems here, and it makes it slow. It's slow to load because they got too much stuff going on. Yeah, here's a peak at 180.
Yep.
On July 18th, 2011, it was 180, and then later earlier this year it was 149. That's the one you're talking about, June 30th,
right?
2014, 149. Now it's down to 53.
June 30th. I mean. Down 53.
June 23.
Yeah, June 23rd. So now you're saying, I mean, that's a 50% cut in how many months?
Well, just a three.
Yeah. And you look at a company like U.S. Silica, SLCA, year to date, it was 72 in, what month was this? In October, September, mid-September, 72. It went down to 40. That's crazy numbers.
Yeah. Huh. It's pretty volatile stuff here.
No kidding.
Yeah, this one here was at 71 on August 25th, and then within, well, no time, it bombed down to 45 on October 6th and right. Back up a little bit.
This is a stock that I like the stock. We own the stock, actually, U.S. Silica. You know, but I got to tell you something. These things just all over the place. Just crazy stuff. All right, what else we got on our list here? Here's something. Tell me what you think about this. So Toys R Us is selling a line of Breaking Bad.
One of the new toys, a tortoise with a guy's head on top of it?
All the Breaking Bad characters.
Oh, Jimmy, this is your Christmas gift.
They're selling Breaking Bad dolls and toys at Toys R Us. Is there something just wrong with the thought of selling?
Sick. Inexcusable.
A meth show.
Might as well make a little lab for Johnny.
Can you imagine? Like, you know, Barbie's Dream House. It's going to be, you know, Johnny, how's your meth lab coming? We can do you need any supplies? Do you need any? We can go back at Toys R Us and we can get all sorts of different things that are fake.
Meth.
It's unbelievable. You know, maybe a Breaking Bad game of some sort, you know what I mean? Crazy. There's a big protest with this now, and Mothers Against Meth or something.
Mothers Against Meth.
So, yeah, this is
that means there's an investment for you. It means these are collectibles.
I suppose. It's
my wife collects stuff like that.
I mean, this is from the What Were They Thinking? I mean, I get that you want, you know, maybe somebody is, oh, hey, I got this Breaking Bad line of dolls and different things and all that. But Toys R Us of all places, I mean, that's like for Spencer's or something, right?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, that's bad news. Also from the craziness is Oscar Pistorius. You know, this is the Blade Runner. Who hacked up his girlfriend?
Yeah, he got 5 years in jail.
5 years.
And he can get out in a year with good behavior, by the way, which was usually not reported.
This, whoever his attorney is, I got to put him on a list.
Yes, we need him.
I mean, wow. I mean, it's not that he wasn't guilty. He was guilty.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like it was I was polishing my gun and it went off. And oh my God. I mean, this was a brutal, nasty, horrible thing.
Yep.
Why is it that he only got 5 years?
I don't know. It seems like somebody got bribed.
Yeah. And in your neck of the woods, this is, of course, in San Francisco. Two more restaurants were awarded Michelin's maximum of 3 stars. You've probably been to these.
Yeah, I find this hard to believe.
Why?
And it's not as though I haven't been to these places, but it seems that Ben Nu, which is one of them, got it skyrocketed to fame a little too quickly. And then the other one, which is this place called, I can't remember, Saison, which you can't get into, and they're rude.
Oh.
And generally speaking, it's one of these places where you have to pay $250 to get a meal. Mm-hmm. It's a tasting menu, take it or leave it. It's molecular gastronomy, which means the food is very inventive at a very high level. And it's a they're bitchy. They, you can't get reservations. They act like a-holes. I mean, all of, this is what I hear from people that try these places. I'll try to go to Cezanne, I guess. But
is Cezanne, is it French Asian? Is that what that is?
No. The Cezanne is actually it's more like the way El Bulli was in Spain. It's experimental weird food. It's the only way I can describe it. The other place is Asian American.
Right. They have pork belly and kimchi and all that good stuff. But so that, I think there's a total of, what is it, five or so now in San Francisco.
I don't think so.
No? I thought that's what I was reading.
Well, I know that's what they say, and I read this thing here, but I don't know what they would be. I mean, I know there's the French Laundry's got 3 stars, but that's not in San Francisco. That's in the Napa Valley. I think that's what they're talking about. And I think Meadow Woods or Meadow, whatever it is also got 3 stars. So I think they're referring to the Bay Area as a whole and counting Napa.
Aha. Aha.
So the city itself never had one.
But I mean, San Francisco's got some good restaurants.
Oh, yeah, tons.
But, I mean, they're...
But, you know, if you've been to France and you've been to 3-star restaurants and even 2-star restaurants in France, the style of restaurant is so above and beyond any 3-star restaurant you have here. It's just, it's a real experience and every level, including the bathroom.
Oh.
And...
you don't eat in the bathroom, do you?
No, you could, though.
Hmm. $250 for a tasting menu seems, and then you have to add all sorts of things to that.
The wine. Yeah, the wine. There's another $250. You've got your $500 to get out of that place
per person.
It can't be that good. Yes.
No, it can't be that good. There's no way. Nope. All right, let's take a look at some of the stocks. What do you say?
Sounds like a winner.
Let me get over here. The list is whittling down ever so slightly. Let's see here. I don't know what's going on here. I'm not getting, is your list a little weird looking?
No.
Oh, mine is a little bit. Okay. Well, let me go over to, why don't you take us through this? Let me just mention that this is not a recommendation to buy or sell any security. And if you do, in fact, think about maybe investing in any of these, please seek financial advice from a professional. John C. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz and Company clients may own any of these that we talk about, and that will be duly noted. Let me, you talk about some of these as I go and take a look if I can find.
Well, I see what you're seeing with a couple like Bud is not coming up.
Yeah, it must be something with Google, their spreadsheets right now.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I have the same problem.
Okay.
So we don't have a lot of them shown here. We do have a few. We have the Vita Healthcare Partners, which has been in place since January, February, March. It's up 10%. Acom Inc., which is your.
Acorn.
Acorn. It looks like an M with this font. Acorn, yes. 53.84%. You picked that up in March, April, May. 5% up on TransDyne Group. That was my pick for CEOs buying the stock. The Pandora Media. You shorted? Or I shorted. One of us shorted.
Yeah, you did.
I shorted. That was mine.
Yeah.
And it's up 11% because it's crapping out. You shorted Twitter, which is up 4%. And you had to go through a rigmarole to do that correctly. There's El Pollo. That's up 7%. It's another short. Yahoo's another short. It's up. Then KB Home. Our other shorts are KB Home, which is down 3. Janus Capital is, which I believe is mine, is neutral. It hasn't done anything. GoPro, which was mine, which went up 12% as a short. And then you shorted Apple.
Yeah.
And that's not working.
Not working yet. I still think the phone is way too big.
Yes. You might be right. A lot of stuff was bounced off. You have a few new ones you want to put on here. What have you got?
So I mentioned Monster Beverage, of course, a potential buyout. The stock is, first of all, it has great fundamentals. And it's growing considerably. Now, of course, if they have any missteps, the stock is going to get, you know, hit hard. But even with the recent sell-off of stocks, Monster did pretty well throughout all of that. So, you know, the potential for Coke to come in here and to take a piece of them or to buy all of it or something to, you know, really help their growth, I think is very reasonable. A new one, FLIR Systems. Now, FLIR Systems makes thermal imaging equipment for, like, if you're...
I thought they made gum. FLIR. No?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm thinking there is something named that, though.
Oh, it's F-L-E-E-R. This is F-L-I-R.
Okay. Yeah, this make they make thermal imaging. They make a few things, but thermal imaging instruments.
I don't know. This may be too late in the game.
It may be, but it could also be that these countries and these airports are looking to buy a lot of these.
That could be.
You know, and the airports need to have these thermal imaging guns as people are walking out of the airplane or into the airplane, and they kind of see them glowing red and like, hello, you're a little hot. You know, so this way they don't have to, you know, use a thermometer or something initially, and it's an easy way to check what's going on. Then again, somebody could just be hot, I suppose. Now, there's a company called, so the point is that they're bought by companies as well as governments, and who knows, maybe they'll put some of that in there. The other one is Ambarella, and this is a company that makes the semis chips for imaging and video and compression. A lot of them are in cameras. And, you know, if we are selling that many iPhones and various smartphones, and if, in fact, they're in these, like, GoPro devices and all that, this is, I think, 8% of their revenue, I think 8% of the revenue comes from GoPro.
Huh.
And this is kind of a play off of GoPro and a play off of the whole idea that, you know what, who needs a camera anymore?
Yes. In fact, I was just about to write a column with that thesis, because it's who needs a camera anymore. And the point of the column would be that Sony is going to end up taking over the professional side of the business eventually.
Not Canon or Nikon?
The reason for this, somebody pointed this out to me years ago, and it was somebody at Olympus. They said at the end of the day, Sony and Panasonic, because they've always been able to do mass production, consumer level mass production, they will just outproduce everybody else.
Hmm.
For better prices.
It's just
a matter of time.
I just sold my Canon XL. What did I sell now? The big old video camera.
Yeah.
You know, with the professional lens. XL1S.
Oh, the XL1, that cool looking one?
Yeah. It looks like, you know, a real professional one and all that. It worked great, but it uses, you can hardwire it right into a computer and just record, or you can do it on little digital tapes and
Those little tapes that are out of date.
Right, but you know it works. I just sold it on Craigslist just yesterday.
What for? What? How much?
$375. Oh, $395. $395.
You got good money for it.
Mm-hmm. I thought so. So I was pretty happy about that. So what do you have on your list?
Oh, I've got a couple of things. One, I think I'm going to short IBM. Let's do that.
Oh.
Why not? I can't believe it's going to rebound. Okay. If it does, I'll short it again. and then I'm looking at the insider trading, and I like what Barry Rosenstein's doing. There's this guy who does a lot of insider trading. He's a director at Walgreens.
Ah.
WAG. Mm-hmm. And he bought on the 10th, he bought $21 million worth of Walgreens stock. Then he bought $34 million worth of Walgreens stock. And then he bought $21 million worth of Walgreens stock, all within 4 days. And he paid market price.
Really?
Yeah.
Walgreens is going to... There's some story today about them, some kind of shareholder pressure or something going on. I don't know. Something that, they were going to do an inversion, and they may not now, but I think Walgreens actually has a good opportunity here. They've done a lot of redesign of their stores. I think we talked about this.
Yeah.
You know, they look like Macy's, some of them.
Well, yeah. So I'm gonna go along with that one. I'm gonna jump on board with this guy.
Okay. What else?
That's it.
Okay. So we got. Let's see.
IBM and Walgreens.
IBM. So you got insiders for Walgreens, and you have no future for company for IBM.
Corporate collapse.
Corporate implosion. Let's put this date in here, right? Now, all of these things that we are talking about can be viewed in their finest detail over on dhunplug.com. There's a Google spreadsheet that updates when it works, updates the prices dynamically of the various securities and then we also did some cool things to highlight that, you know, how if they're up, they're green. If they're up more than 20%, they're bright green. If they're down, they're red. And it gives you all the different tracking for all this. Very cool way of to simply and free. You can do it yourself as well if you learn how to use the mnemonics that are available right from Google. Because what it does is it pulls all of the Google information from the Google Finance site. Right. And that's kind of a nice thing. It just pulls right over to the spreadsheets, which I think is a really cool thing. I don't know why nobody else did this.
It seems, well, you know, people talk a big game about stuff like this, but a lot of people never do it. And you don't even know, very few people even know Google does it.
Yeah, probably not. It's not. It's really not that hard to work with either.
No, and it's cool.
Yep, exactly.
And it's shareable.
Exactly. And if it's social, it's just it makes a feel good kind of thing.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, I think that'll cover us for this week.
I will talk to you next week. Everybody should be encouraged to take a look at thedisciplineinvestor.com where we're doing Stocktoberfest. A lot of stocks are very much detailed with buy, sell, or whatever their rating is, ranking, and scores, fundamental and technical. That's going on all through the month of October. Stocktoberfest on thedisciplineinvestor.com.
Very funny.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right, see you on Tuesday.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.